Well, thank everybody for coming. I think as I recognize some of you were just in my last presentation, so that's good. My name is Brian Harry, and I'm going to talk a bit about Visual Studio 2012 and our application lifecycle management capabilities. Last talk was about Visual Studio 2012. The next talk is more about what comes next. I'm going to spend a few minutes covering some aspects of 2012 that I didn't talk about last time, but this will be a little more forward-looking. I also am going to save some time at the end of this one for Q&A, so if you guys have questions, think up some questions, because I did not keep a whole hour of content here, so I'm hoping we'll have some good questions. All right. So I'd saved a few slides that are just holdovers from the last deck in case anybody wasn't here. I'm not going to spend much time on them. I talked about some key trends that are happening in application lifecycle management, specifically around the rate of change happening so quickly and us as developers having to be able to react to it, the need to really develop and test incrementally in small chunks and to get feedback repeatedly through that process, how cloud development changes our ability to react to application issues and feedback, how customer connections an incredibly important part of development. More and more we see teams using customer feedback directly to drive their development. The disciplines converging, especially between development and operations these days, and team distribution. So just very brief recap of that. I talked a bit about build, measure, learn because I recognize so many of you. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that again. But this is that notion of conforming an idea, building sort of a minimum viable product or a very small piece of that idea, getting that in customers' hands, measuring how they use it, and then turning around and coming up with the next idea based on how people use your stuff. And then iterating on that very rapidly, iterating daily, as quickly as you can on turning those ideas into that feedback into ideas and those ideas into new product. And then I sort of painted this picture of the application lifecycle that talked about the various phases and how we how our goal as developers is to get through these cycles as quickly as possible through definition, development, deployment, operation, adaptation, and feedback. All right, so I promised I'd go fast through those. I did. All right, so I put together a slide which was just kind of my list of favorite features for Visual Studio 2012 application lifecycle management. Now, there's a ton of stuff in Visual Studio I'm not going to cover on here. We did a huge amount of work to enable Windows 8 development, whether it's building C++ XAML or C++ DirectX, or it's JavaScript and HTML, or C# or VB and XAML. We did a huge amount in terms of tooling to help people create rich, interactive, touch-enabled applications. It's great stuff, and I'm sure someone here today will be talking about it. That won't be me. I'm going to talk about the application lifecycle management capabilities. These are not in any particular order, although I tried to put them roughly in the order of going around the circle, rather than this is not exactly like my prioritized list of features. But the emphasis here is, as I said, our goal has been to remove friction all the way around that circle. So PowerPoint storyboarding, I demoed that in the last session. I won't demo it again now. Agile project management, the ability to manage scrum teams and manage, use a task board and a backlog and sprint planning. I demoed that last talk as well, so I won't demo that again. My work, which is the ability to easily manage what I'm working on quickly and easily suspend and resume that work. I demoed that last time too. I won't show that. Code review is another feature I'm pretty excited about, and that one I'm going to demo because I did not get a chance to demo that last time. So I wanted to do a quick look. You know, we think code review is an incredibly valuable tool in an organization, and it's valuable in a couple from a couple of perspectives. One, it's important as a way to sort of get just a second pair of eyes on any significant change that you're making. Like our development team has a policy that all code gets code reviewed before it goes into the system. It's just a good practice. It's also a good way for other people on your team to learn. Both learn by seeing the changes that you're making and why you're making them and having an opportunity to ask questions, and also learn by the comments or suggestions that other people are making to you about your code. So code review can be a very collaborative experience that both improves your code and improves the quality of your team. So this is the My Work window again that's showing me, you know, what I'm working on. I'm working on this task that was to implement something. I've got a set of changes I'm working on. So I've got these files checked out. And I feel like I'm good. I've made these changes. I've run my tests. Everything works. I'm ready to check in. But before I check in, I'd like to get somebody to look at it. So I'm going to click Request Review. And I'm going to add, thought he was in here, but he's not. I'm going to add Brian, and maybe I'll also add Adam. So I'm going to add a few reviewers. I can add as many as I like. It's going to record what task I was working on, so I can go look at the work item I was trying to do. I can enter a description. You know, hey, I made some pretty major changes to the data access. Could you look that over? All right, so I can add some comments, and then I can submit my request. And so that'll go out there. All the people that I've identified for the code review will get a request to do a code review, and that will show up down here in the code review tab and allow me to look at it. So I can open that up. I can see that no one has responded for this request so far. So I'm going to open that code review. I can see who's reviewing it. I can see the comments that I made. I can see the list of files that have been changed. I can open the work item that was associated with it. I can go look at the code. So let's look at this code. That was just a simple comment change. Look at the next file. So that looks like a pretty major change. So I don't really like the way that looks because that looks like a null reference waiting to happen. So I can say, isn't that going to crash? Did you test it at all? So I can save that. And I can continue reviewing, looking at other stuff. And looks like I've made some private variables public. I can sort of select those and comment. Shouldn't you make properties for these? And I can publish my comments as I go. So I say send comments. And what that will do is it'll publish my comments to the server, and someone can see that those comments have been updated and can engage with me in a conversation, either interactively or after the fact. So they can come into the code review request and see that that I've done that, and they can reply and say, oh yeah, that was a typo. I'll fix it. And, you know, this one, maybe I want to say, and you notice when I click on it, it automatically brings up the source code with the lines highlighted that I commented. And I'll say, no, I prefer it this way. So I can have a conversation back and forth. We can debate whether or not that's the right design pattern to use. And then when I'm done, I can save this code review. Oops. I can close the review, complete. And all of that I've done is now saved on the server. The list of files, the work I was working on, all of the comments, the conversation that we had back and forth. And it's associated with that check-in once I check that code in. So I can go back and see for each check-in what code reviews were done, what feedback was given. So it's a really nice tool both to improve your code, to share knowledge on the team, and keep a record of what code reviews have been done. All right, so that's one of my favorite features. Another one of my favorite features is the Test Explorer. So I talked about that also a little bit in the last. I demoed running some unit tests. I talked about the framework extensibility, the fakes and stubs for isolated unit testing, the support for C++ unit testing, JavaScript unit testing, all of that stuff. Next one, local workspaces, which I'm not going to demo because it's a little bit of a tricky thing to demo in this kind of scenario. But one of the things about TFS up through 2010 that was one of the biggest pieces of customer feedback that we got was how painful it was to work disconnected. That if you ever disconnected, TFS did not like you. It would give you error messages. It would give you a bad experience when you tried to sync back up with the server. It was just not a very good experience to work offline. So we implemented a new thing, which actually I can do at least a little demo so that you can see what I'm talking about. A new thing called local workspaces. So when I create a workspace in TFS that defines kind of what source code that I'm going to use, we've added in it an option that you can set it to either local or server. And by default, in TFS 2012, they're all local. The sort of old way is server. Server still has some advantages. It's the most scalable. So most Microsoft devs use server workspaces because our workspaces typically have 100 to 200,000 files in them. They're very, very large workspaces, and server workspaces are optimized for that. Local workspaces, though, are optimized for being very lightweight, very flexible, and having a really good offline experience. So if I weren't remoted into a VM here, I could pull the network cable out and keep working. I could be checking out files. I could be diffing to compare the changes that I've made versus the last known good version of the file. I could undo my changes and revert back to the code as it was before I started making my changes. About the only thing that I want to do that I can't do is I can't check in. So local workspaces don't give you an offline check-in, but they give you offline of most everything else that you want to do while you're developing. Some people didn't like the fact that files were read-only, TFS used to use the read-only flag to denote files that shouldn't be modified because they're not checked out. Local workspaces eliminate that notion, so there's no notion of checkout anymore. You just start editing files, and it just works. It recognizes they're checked out. You don't have the read-only bit. It works better for if you're using other tools. If you're using Notepad or you're using some tool that's not TFS enabled, it just works. You just edit your files, and when you feel like you're done, you switch over to TFS and you say check in, and it automatically figures out which files you've modified and how to check those files in. So local workspaces are super nice and flexible, particularly when you're working with tools that are not TFS enabled. All right, so that's local workspaces. Oh, and I won't stay here long. Code clone detection is another very cool feature. So code clone detection is this really neat algorithm that came out of Microsoft Research that allows it to sort of search through a bunch of code and find code that looks similar. So kind of your scenarios here are, let's imagine I found a piece of code that had a bug in it. It was a pattern that I needed to change. And, you know, either I changed something that that requires all the people that call it to change, or I found a particular way I was using code that was wrong and I needed to go update all the places that use that code. Or maybe I've got the problem that a bunch of my developers are cut, copy, paste happy. So they're just copying code all over the place. And it's creating a maintenance problem for me because I've got all this code that I'm having to maintain. And what I really want to do is refactor it and get rid of all of that copies of the code. So those are some of the scenarios where code clone is really cool. This solution I have here doesn't have a lot of clones in it, but let me show you a little bit of what you can do. So first of all, you can go to Analyze and say Analyze Solution for Code Clones. And what that's going to do is just search through all of your code and look for anything that looks similar. Now, this is not a text search. This is not saying, hey, let's find everything that has the exact same strings. This is a parse of the source code, and it understands the type system, and it's looking for things that are similar from a code perspective. So, you know, comments don't matter, white space doesn't matter, the names of the variables could change. In fact, sometimes the types could change, sometimes the methods could change. We're looking for code that is similar. And as such, matches have strength. Some matches are very strong, some matches are weaker. And a weaker match means it kind of looks similar, but you know, it has some differences. So I've searched this, and it found two pieces of code that it said were similar. So here's one piece of code. There we go. See if I can give it a little more room. So there's one piece of code, and it looks like it's doing a link query and setting a bunch of variables, etc. And if I look at, and that's line 54 through 68 of Service Tickets Controller. So if I look at Service Tickets Controller, lines 74 through 89, sure enough, I see another section of code that looks pretty darn similar. In fact, they're both called assign schedule, so they look like overloaded functions or something. So this is a really good candidate for me to refactor this code out into another function and just call it from these two other functions. Another scenario I can do is I can take a piece of code and say, you know what, I've got a bug in this code. Maybe this is calling save on the service ticket repository and save on the schedule item repository, and maybe I need to change that pattern. Maybe I want to change it to a single save, or maybe something else I want to change. I can right-click on that, and I can say find matching clones and solution. And what that will do is search for anywhere that I find something that looks like that pattern. And sure enough, I found pretty much something that looks exactly the same. But again, it could have been subtly different. It could have used different variable names. It could have used subclasses. It could have, in some cases, used different method names. So that's code clone detection. It's a super nice way for making you more productive, finding patterns of bugs or refactoring your code. So stakeholder feedback. I talked about that one last time as well. That's our feedback tool that enables me as a product owner to request feedback on sort of the results of one of my sprints and get people to try it out and super easily give me feedback, capture screenshots, annotate them, record audio and video, etc. Another one is exploratory testing. So exploratory testing takes a little explaining. In TFS 2010, in Visual Studio 2010, we released a whole set of products for testing. And those products allow you to include a test case management system that allowed me to define a set of test cases, enumerate the steps, explain the expected results, and then a manual testing tool that allows me to select a test suite, go through and execute each of the test cases, report the results. We also have a bunch of automated testing capabilities, a bunch of reporting capabilities, so a whole bunch of stuff to enable testers to work better with the development team. in 2012, we took that a bit further. We said, you know, Agile teams tend to spend less of their time doing that kind of testing. Rather than having a well-articulated set of requirements and a clear set of test cases described against those requirements, what they tend to want to do is something called exploratory testing, which is pick an area of the product, pick a scenario, pick a user story, and just go try it. I want to just experiment with it. I want to try things. And the exploratory testing tool is very much like the manual testing tool, except it doesn't give you a clear set of steps. Instead, it allows you to just go play around with the product. At the same time, it's doing everything our manual testing tool is doing. It is recording everything you're doing. It's keeping a log of all the steps that you're taking. So if you were to, say, be playing around with the product and you find a problem, you can take screenshots and have video recording like I showed with the feedback tool. But you can also create a bug that captures the exact set of steps that you did, and we've recorded the mouse clicks and the keystrokes and everything that you did. You can also create a test case from it. So maybe you want to create a regression test. You've just found a bug, you filed it, and you want to have a test case that you will now remember you need to go run to validate that that bug got fixed. So you can super easily create a test case out of that exploratory session that you just did and keep that around as a reminder to go back and validate it. So that's the exploratory testing tool. Another one that we've worked on hard in 2012, and I talked about this very little bit last time, but System Center integration. Couple areas in which we've done that. One is with the Service Manager. So we've enabled the ability, Service Manager has a very rich ability to handle alerts and raise those to an operator, has knowledge base articles to help them understand what to do. But until now, it's had really no ability to help the service team interact with the development team. In 2012 and with System Center 2012, you can now take an incident in System Center. You can right-click on it and say send to development. And what that will do is it'll automatically create a production incident work item in Team Foundation Server, link that to Service Manager, and collect all of that data, the log data and all of the diagnostic data out of System Center, attach that to the TFS work item. And then as the developers look at that, they might suggest things you should try. They might ask for additional information. All of that goes back into System Center. The operators can see it. They can react. They can respond. They can add additional clarification. They can try things. That then goes back to TFS. So it's synchronized back and forth between TFS and System Center, providing a more transparent relationship or enabling communication between those two groups. So pretty excited about that. The other thing that we've done in the last demo, I demoed briefly and very briefly, IntelliTrace in production and the ability to use PowerShell to turn on IntelliTrace and capture a trace. We've now done System Center integration with that as well, and you can capture, you can just within Service Manager turn on IntelliTrace, have it capture your logs, attach that to your tickets, propagate that into TFS, and enable the rich flow of IntelliTrace through into TFS. And then the last thing we've been working on, and it's just getting ready to ship this fall with System Center SP1, is what's called GSM, Global Service Manager, Global Service Monitor for System Center. This is an ability, so we've got data centers all around the world, and people often want to understand, so I've got an app, usually a web app, that is exposed for people around the world to use. And I want to know what the experience of the people around the world is. Is it working? Are they able to access it? Is the performance good? All kinds of things can happen. If I add some big bitmap to a page, it can suddenly make my app very slow in a region that has very low network bandwidth. Whereas when I'm testing it on my dev team, where I've got, you know, a gigabit connection, seems fine. I don't have any problems. So GSM, System Center GSM, enables you to have tests running in our data centers around the world. I think it's 9 initially. There'll be 9 data centers spread around the world that you can write a test using the Visual Studio web test capability, and then deploy that to System Center GSM data centers and have it ping your app. You know, every 5 minutes it pings your app to see, is my app healthy? Is it performing well? Are my customers around the world getting an experience? And then failures in those, or threshold violations where, say, a test takes longer than your threshold that you set, can trigger an alert in System Center, which can then get escalated as a work item back into development. So again, kind of just another piece of enabling the collaboration between the development team and the operations team. Another of my favorite features in 2012 is our preemptive analytics integration. So preemptive analytics is a tool that enables you to instrument your .NET applications and send back information. It can be information like crashes. So anytime your app crashes, send me a stack trace and sort of information about the app, what it was doing when it crashed. Or it could be usage data. Tell me what parts of my app people are using. So we've done integration with that so that, you know, if you deploy an app out there, whether it's in a server farm on your data center, in the cloud, whether it's a client app running somewhere in your organization or somewhere in the world, your app can phone home, can send email, or not email, send a message back to your TFS server and let it know that I've had a problem. And then we aggregate those things. So we sort of match stack traces. We are able to identify patterns that indicate the same problem. And then we can give you a nice report that says, you know, you've had 2,000 instances of this crash in the last, you know, in the last week. You've had 200 of these, you know, 100 of those, 27 of those. So you get this nice sort of report that says, here's all of the problems that my customers are having and how frequently they're having them. And that helps me prioritize, where I'm going to invest in fixing those bugs. Clearly, I'm going to go for the ones that the most people are hitting the most often. So I'm pretty excited about that. And then lastly, the Team Foundation Service. Team Foundation Service is our online Team Foundation server that you can access via the web. Don't have to install your own TFS anymore. It's got most of the capabilities of the on-premises TFS. It is super cool for small teams that want to get going fast, want a lightweight system that's easy to use. So I'm going to demo that in just a minute because I'm going to show some of the other stuff that we're doing in that respect or in that forum. All right, so those are some of my favorite features of 2012. It's by no means an exhaustive list. There's so many things that we did in this release. It would take me forever to get through them all. But I wanted to highlight, you know, what I think are some of the most impactful ones. All right, so let's talk about Visual Studio Update 1. Visual Studio Update 1 shipped yesterday. Let me give you a little context in case you don't know. Sort of what Visual Studio updates are. So we've historically shipped Visual Studio about every 2 years. About. And usually somewhere between, say, 2008 and 2010, we would ship a service pack somewhere in there. And that service pack would mostly be some bug fixes. It would usually have a few features in it, but it would mostly be a bunch of bug fixes. And, you know, I talked about a set of trends, including sort of speed of change and customer connection and all of those things. We are trying to live with sort of those trends. And one of the things we've concluded is we need to figure out how to deliver value in Visual Studio more often. We can't wait 2 years. It's just too long, too much changes in 2 years. We need to be able to respond to feedback and deliver to value to people more often. So we hatched this idea, starting in Visual Studio 2012, to deliver updates roughly quarterly. Now, we've never actually said it'll be exactly every quarter, but roughly every 3 months. We will deliver an update to Visual Studio 2012 that is a combination of new features and bug fixes and performance enhancements and all of that kind of stuff. Now, there will be much more emphasis on new features than there ever has been, certainly with our service pack notion. So we're going to be delivering value on a regular basis to our customers. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to do another major release ever. There will be a Visual Studio V-Next. I don't yet know what it'll be called, but there will be another big release of Visual Studio. It does, however, mean that we're done with service packs. At least we think so. We'll see. We do not expect to do another service pack. We think the updates are the replacement for service packs. So that's kind of the idea behind Visual Studio updates. We're doing TFS and our various other capabilities as well. So let's talk a little bit about the improvements in Visual Studio Update 1 that shipped last night. So we've got a bunch of stuff in testing. So we've had our testing product in the market since 2010. And, you know, we've now gotten quite a lot of adoption of it, and we've gotten a bunch of feedback. We actually didn't get to respond to too much of that feedback in 2012. And the reason was because we were really focused in 2012 on getting our testing tools working for Windows 8 Store applications, unit testing, functional testing, manual testing, all of that stuff. And we made a bunch of progress on that, but it sort of consumed all of our capacity, and we didn't get a chance to sort of address the feedback that we've gotten through early adoption of that product. So we did a bunch there, trying to address the feedback that we've gotten. So that's one area for Update 1. Another one is a bunch of work around Agile. Agile project management, unit testing. We've done a bunch of work to improve those capabilities. SharePoint. We had a big focus on SharePoint development, particularly in the ALM space. Now, we've had SharePoint development tools for quite some time now, but you know, our testing tools and some of our more advanced developer tools didn't really work well with SharePoint. And so we sort of took the opportunity to go back and really make them work well with SharePoint. And then a bunch of features for just app building of various forms. So I'm going to drill into each of these and give you a little better idea what they are. So back to testing. So one of the big improvements for testing is cross-browser functional testing. So in Visual Studio, we added back in 2010, the ability to do functional testing of web applications. So you can record a session in a web application, you can add validation to validate UI elements, and then you can replay those. But it was an IE-specific capability. So you had to record it in IE, you could only play it back in IE. That was cool, so you could validate your application in one browser, but you really want to be able to validate your application in lots of browsers, because you know your users are going to be using a lot of different browsers. So we added the ability to do cross-browser testing. We did it by adopting the Selenium framework. So we're using the Selenium framework under our browser testing. And what that Selenium is, and how many people are familiar with Selenium? Have you ever heard of it? A few. So the nice thing about using Selenium is it's actually maintained by the browser vendors. So Google maintains the Chrome support for Selenium. Apple maintains their support for Selenium. Firefox maintains their support. So we don't have to be you don't have to rely on us to make sure we're up to date with the latest browser changes. In fact, you know, Google, for example, uses Selenium in their own Chrome testing. So you can be sure Selenium will be kept up to date because they need it to test Google itself. Image action log for exploratory tests. So we added the ability, I think I have a screenshot here. So we added the ability as you are running, I explained what exploratory testing was. It was a feature we added in 2012 that allows me to just go and use the product. And I mentioned that we recorded the steps of what you did. So here, you know, it says go to the web page, perform a refresh, click the volume panel, etc. But they, in 2012, it was just text. It would just say, list the steps. What we've done in update one is added the ability to capture a small screenshot around what you were doing. So that not only do you get the text that says what you were doing, but you get a visual of what you were seeing at the time you were doing it. So that's a super nice way to make it sort of easier for the developer to follow, the repro steps for the bug. Another piece of feedback we've gotten from customers was, hey, you know, it's great that you've got this test case management system. I can define my tests. I can define the expected results. But, you know, often when I'm running the test, I need to be able to go back and modify the test because I've realized something in the product changed and I need to update the test while I'm running it, change the steps. And we didn't allow that. We required you to exit running the test, go back over to the test case management system, modify the test, then go back to running the test and rerun through it. And as you can imagine, if you needed to make very many changes to it, that could get pretty frustrating going back and forth. So we've added the ability, while you're running the test, to just edit the test steps in place. So this is our little tool that allows you to step through a manual test, and we've got an edit button which just directly opens the test, allows you to modify the steps, and then when you save it, immediately updates your progress. All right. Next one is we got a bunch of feedback around people running manual tests and getting partway through a test. And then realizing they needed to go do something else. Remember, I talked about interruptions for developers, so think of this as interruptions for testers. I'm going through a manual test and I've gotten interrupted. I need to go do something else, and I want to get back to where I was quickly. So it used to be that if you did that, you had to cancel the test and you lost your progress so far. And then you'd have to come back later and rerun the test and go through all the steps that you had done up till then. So we added the ability to pause and resume testing. So there's now a pause button that you can click. And what that will do is, much like suspend and resume I showed you, it'll suspend and resume your manual test session. So it'll save up all of the information about your manual test. We'll save it off to the server. You'll actually, if you go back into the test manager, you'll see that the tester is in a paused state. You see your list of paused tests. You can go back and resume that test. It'll pull all that data back off the server and resume your manual test back where you left off and enable you to complete testing. All right. We've also added VS Update support for Test Manager. So Visual Studio, I talked about doing these updates to Visual Studio. One of the neat things about Visual Studio is we've got an update manager. So whenever we release an update, you get a little pop-up window that lets you know, hey, there's an update for Visual Studio available for you. And then you can just click on it and download that update and keep working. We did not have that in Test Manager for 2012. So we were shipping Test Manager updates, but you don't get notified that we're shipping them. So for update one, the only way for you to know to get it is to somehow read a blog or have somebody tell you that we shipped an update, and then you can go to the web, download it, install it. But once you've done that, You've installed VS Update support for Test Manager because that's in Update 1. And that means when Update 2 ships in Test Manager, you'll get a nice little pop-up letting you know that there's an update available that you can download and install. Remember how I talked about the trend of ease of acquisition and being able to make it easier for people to get your software? Well, that's what we're doing here, is making it easier for people to get our software. All right, so let's talk about Agile. So we've done a bunch of work in Update 1 in Agile as well. The first thing is Kanban support. So we did Agile Project Management in VS 2012, task board and backlog and sprint planning and all of that. And you know, so far people have really loved it. We've gotten really good feedback on it. People really like it. But there's a growing segment of developers and development teams that want to use Kanban as their development sort of management methodology. While it's certainly got some similarities to Agile, it's also got some significant differences. Agile is about time-boxed iterations, sprints, and Kanban is not. Kanban is about flow. It's about managing flow of work through a set of states and eliminating waste and eliminating bottlenecks in the flow, and then optimizing, maximizing the velocity of the flow of the work. So people wanted that, so we've added it. So you now have a view of your product backlog that it looks a little bit like the task board, because it is a little bit like the task board, but it has it visualizes it as flow. You'll notice one thing, I don't think I have a pointer here, but you'll see the little 4 of 4 up at the top. That is an ability to set what are called work in progress limits. So Kanban has this notion of no more than a certain amount of work is allowed to be in a given state, because what you're trying to do is avoid bottlenecks. You don't want a bunch of work to build up in one state. That means you have a problem. So you can set work in progress limits, and if you get more than that amount of work in a given state, it will flag it for you and let you know that you've got too much work there and bring it to your attention. We've also built a cumulative flow diagram. So in Agile or in Scrum, your kind of primary notion of progress is your sprint burndown diagram. In Kanban, your sort of primary way you track progress is through the cumulative flow diagram. So what you're seeing is work progressing through a set of states, and any one of these colors that gets really wide indicates you've got a bottleneck problem in your flow, and that's something you need to pay attention to. So, done a bunch of stuff. The big thing we didn't do in Update 1 is enable you to easily customize the states. So, in Kanban, it's very common to have a lot more states. In Agile, you usually only have a few. You know, you have kind of new, in progress, and done. It's a relatively few amount of states. Whereas in Kanban, you'll often have 10 or 15 states that you're tracking work in relatively fine-grained progress through. And it's a little tricky to do the customization of that. So in Update 2, we'll be making it way easier to customize and add new states and manage the flow through that. Drag and drop assignment on the task board. So we made it way easier to manage assigning work to people. So we added the ability to simply drag and drop tasks onto people to assign them. I think you saw me in my demo try to do that on the task board, and it didn't work, because on that demo machine I was using Visual Studio 2012 RTM and not Update 1, but I'm so used to Update 1 now, I do it by habit, and Update 1 allows it in a number of places. It allows it here in the sprint backlog. It allows it on the task board. Then there's a bunch of minor things that we did, like link and attachment counts on tabs. I don't know how well you can see that, but When you're looking at tabs, you used to have to actually click on all of those links to see if there was interesting, if anything were interesting there, if anybody had attached a storyboard or something for you to look at. Now we've added nice counts next to each of the tabs to just let you know, yeah, there's something here for you to look at, or nah, there's nothing here, you don't need to click on this. And there were sort of a whole bunch of small improvements kind of along those lines. Some look and feel improvements, some work item count preview, some navigation, previous and next navigation through lists of work items. Just a bunch of little small things that just generally made the Agile project management system easier to use. For update one, let's see. So sorry, for SharePoint. So as I said, we did a bunch of work for SharePoint. A bunch of different things. The first one was a unit testing emulator. So I talked about in my previous talk about fakes and stubs and this ability to test your code in isolation. So we call that sort of mocking framework or the fakes and stub framework an emulator, so that I can write a component that sits inside an emulator that makes it think it's in the real app, but allows me to test my component in isolation without deploying it onto a real system with all of those components configured. And so we built a unit testing emulator for SharePoint. So now you can unit test your SharePoint code without actually having to install SharePoint, install your components into a SharePoint installation, and run them in the context of real SharePoint. You're actually able to test them isolated in your own DLLs on your dev machine by itself inside Visual Studio using the SharePoint unit testing emulator. We did functional testing. Hold on, let me remember what I meant here. Oh, for SharePoint, yeah, of course. We this was actually fairly small. We shipped some bugs in 2012 that made your ability to do UI automation SharePoint not work very well. So we basically fixed those bugs, and now we have first-class support for being able to automate functional tests against your SharePoint-based applications. Load testing. This was a big one. So SharePoint is a notoriously difficult app to load test, and an important one. It's a server app. You get a lot of people using it. You want to make sure that it scales and that it performs well and that it's reliable. The problem with SharePoint with respect to load testing is, you know, the way load testing works generally is you record a script against your app and then you play that script back. The problem is SharePoint's responses are all dynamically generated, and it embeds GUIDs into its responses. So when I record the session with SharePoint, I record what I'm doing. What I end up doing is recording the GUIDs that it sends me. But those GUIDs aren't valid the next time I run the test, so my test doesn't work. It just gives errors. So we built a set of infrastructure around our load test using what are called extraction rules to be able to virtualize out those dynamic pieces of SharePoint and record a test, but know which pieces SharePoint is going to then substitute in when I rerun it. And then when I rerun that recorded test, I can pull the pieces out of that execution, out of those responses, and insert it back into the test so that those tests then work properly. So we now have full load testing for whether it's perf or stability, robustness for SharePoint. So that one's pretty cool. And then IntelliTrace collection for SharePoint. So one of the things about IntelliTrace is that it can be very overwhelming. It can generate a lot of data, particularly if you're writing an application against a very rich framework that you don't control a lot of the code for. So you get all of this trace data on all of this code that isn't yours, and it's just not that interesting. So what we've done is built a custom collection plan for SharePoint that enables us to capture sort of the most relevant data about a SharePoint application and allow you to debug that without being overwhelmed by all of the detail. All right, so app building improvements, unit testing, grouping and filtering. So this was a feature we actually had in Visual Studio 2010, which we lost in 2012. I mentioned we made a bunch of big changes to unit testing. We pretty much re-implemented our unit testing framework. In our goal of adding extensibility for other unit testing frameworks, dramatically improving the perf. The perf of unit testing now is like 10 times faster than it was in 2010. In that process, we lost some of the features that we had in 2010, and we're gradually bringing them back. One of them is unit testing, grouping, and filtering. So I can annotate my unit tests with categories that indicate how I want to think about groups of my unit tests. And then inside the runner, we're able to group those unit tests by category. And then I can, you know, I can run just the test for a given category, et cetera. So, you know, so it's clear when I'm modifying a piece of code, I only need to run the unit tests that are affected by that particular piece of code. C++ Windows Store app unit testing. So we added the ability to do C++ unit testing in 2012, but we didn't have the ability to do C++ Windows Store apps. The framework didn't work for Windows Store apps. So we've added the ability to do that in Update 1. We added C++ support for targeting Windows XP. This was when we released 2012, in fact, when we shipped the beta and the release candidate, this was a massive piece of feedback that we got from our customers that they really, really needed C++ to continue to have the ability to target Windows XP because we still have a lot of people with Windows XP machines out there. And people wanted to use the new features of C++ as we work on new language compliance, new performance optimizations. They wanted to be able to use the new compilers, but be able to target Windows XP. So we started work on that several months before we shipped 2012, but it was a pretty big project, and we finally got that done and have delivered it now in Update 1. That one should make a lot of people happy. Native ARM dump debugging. So we added the ability to do crash dump debugging for ARM apps, right? So for Surface RT apps, I can now take crash dumps, debug them, understand what happened. Mixed managed and native Windows Store app debugging. So we've had that for Windows desktop apps for a long time, but when I've got an app that's a combination of C++ native code and say C# managed code, being able to step back and forth between it, do variable inspection is super valuable. And we've added the ability to do that now. JavaScript memory profiling, so the ability to understand which elements of my JavaScript code are using memory and how much memory they're using. Because, you know, often you will find in very surprising places in your code holding on to a tremendous amount of memory, and that can be darn hard to track down. And then a new feature, which I'll show you a screenshot of, but I'm not going to demo because there's another talk later. I think it's either later today or tomorrow. We're going to do a full demo of CodeMap for you. But we did this feature called CodeMap. And let me set a little context. So we built in 2010 a set of architecture tools, UML modeling, an architecture explorer, a layer diagram, a bunch of tools to help you visualize your code. And the Architecture Explorer was something you could run over your solution, and it would create a visual view of your app and all of the dependencies between. You could see classes and namespaces and how they're related to each other, and you could explore it. And we got a bunch of feedback on that for any real app, for like a sizable app, it was just too overwhelming. It was too big, and in fact, we had some memory issues in 2010 that caused it to not even work for substantially large apps. So we built this tool called CodeMap that allows me, rather than to just run it across my whole app and see the whole thing, allows me to incrementally build up a visualization of my app. So while I'm looking at the code, I can say, oh, there's a method, add it to my diagram. And what it will do is it will add that to your diagram and add the dependencies automatically between that and everything else on your diagram. And on my diagram, I can incrementally explore. So I can say, I could right click on one of these methods and say, show me all the places that call this method, and it'll add all the call sites to your diagram. Or show me all of the subclasses of this class, and it will add all the subclasses to your diagram. Again, showing you all the dependencies. So a really nice way to sort of incrementally explore the visualization of your application. So Visual Studio Update, so that's Visual Studio Update 1. A lot of new stuff, like more, like that's almost a major version of Visual Studio's worth of new capabilities, all shoved into Update 1. We have a bunch of stuff coming in Update 2. I'm going to go over it briefly. None of it's built yet. I don't have any screenshots of it because we haven't done it yet. But I want to talk about the areas we're investing in. And I'm being a little conservative because there's stuff we're working on I'm not going to list here. I'm mostly focused on the stuff I'm reasonably certain is going to happen. This one I am going to show a brief demo of, web-based manual testing. So we've gotten feedback that, hey, the manual testing tools that you build are cool, but we'd really like, the problem is I have to install a client on my app, and, you know, my company, for certification reasons, you know, we have to test the app in a pristine environment that's exactly like the production environment, and I can't install the testing tool on the app. How was I going to do this? I think I was going to do it here real quick. So what we've done is added the ability to run a web test, or a manual test inside, maybe I did it over here. Sorry. Getting lost on which machine I did it on. So remember I said something about feature flags and the notion of capabilities that are available on the service, but only certain people can see them? Well, this test hub is something that's been deployed on the service for months, but it's only turned on right now for a set of accounts. Mine is one of them. So I've got here a test plan, a set of tests that I want to execute in this test plan. I can click run on that test. It's going to pull up the set of tests that I want to execute. And let's just pick something random as the app that I'm going to test. And I can go through this browser-based thing, execute a set of steps, see the expected results, mark things as passed as I do them. Ultimately, if I want to, mark something as failed, make a comment on that, and then create a bug out of that, and that will collect all of this information, file it in a bug report, include the repro steps, show up in the test case reporting, you can do all of that now from the web without needing to have anything installed on your machine. Leave this page. All right. And I'm about out of time. I did not expect this to take as long as it did, so I'm going to go real quick through the last few things. So web-based manual testing, the ability to automatically create a unit test project. Today you have to do that manually. Code coverage for manual testing of desktop apps. So we added, in Update 1, we added the ability to do code coverage on web applications. We're now in Update 2 adding the ability to do code coverage on desktop applications during manual testing. We already have it for automated testing. The ability to do test plan cloning so that, like, when I branch my code for a new release, I can branch my test plan with my code. Simple test process customization that allows me to customize the set of test outcomes. Unit testing for Windows Phone applications. A few more things, Kanban state customization, which I mentioned earlier, some lighter weight work item tracking stuff. We're going to do tags and the ability to do sort of lightweight work item filtering send work items in email from web access. We've added the ability to email work items to people from inside the web. Server build drops, so the ability to, when you do a build, particularly this is important in the cloud, to be able to store the build drops in TFS and then easily download them as zip files. We're going to be doing some additional Git integration on top of the Git TF work that we've done. And in general, in the future, the plan is we look past the updates and into the next set of major versions. The things we're looking at are release management, sort of the ability to manage the flow of bits from testing to pre-production to production. More analytics work, like I've talked about with preemptive analytics. A-B testing, the ability to instrument your app and test variations and see how people respond to that. And what I call lightweight star. We're doing sort of a bunch of work to just make TFS easier and faster and more approachable, particularly for small teams that aren't very interested in process. So that's it. Same ending slide I had last time. You can get started today. You can download update one. You can try the service. The service has always got the latest, coolest stuff on it. Give it a try, and please give us feedback. Thank you very much.